Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Chile's presidential election takes place on Sunday. The two leading candidates are both women, and both women are the daughters of generals who were once friends and colleagues in Chile's Air Force. But the similarities end there. In fact, Michelle Bachelet and Evelyn Matte are opposites in many ways, both politically and culturally. Bachelet is a member of the Socialist Party, and her father was tortured and killed during the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. Matte is a Conservative Party member, and her father supported Pinochet. Bachelet was tortured by the junta's secret police before she fled the country for East Germany. She came back to Chile to become a pediatrician, switched to politics, and became Chile's first female elected president in 2006. The Constitution forbids consecutive terms, and in 2010, Sebastián Piñera became the first conservative to win the presidency since Pinochet was ousted. Matte, on the other hand, got her economics degree in Santiago, was elected to the legislature, and is now Piñera's labor minister. On Sunday, voters will choose between these two women, along with seven other candidates on the ballot. To bring us the latest developments in the presidential and legislative elections and add context, we'll hear from a Reuters correspondent in Santiago and two scholars who focus on Chile, including one who previously covered Latin America for the Washington Post. But first, World Watch with Raymond Tungacar.
Relief efforts in the central Philippines are picking up nearly a week after a devastating typhoon struck the region. A U.S. aircraft carrier arrived off the coast of the Philippines today, bolstering international relief efforts. Dozens of countries have also pledged financial aid to the country. Earlier efforts to provide relief to the city of Tacloban were hampered by closed roads and lawlessness. Police and military personnel have since been deployed to restore order to the city. International negotiators failed to reach an agreement with Iran over the weekend to freeze the country's nuclear program. Iranian officials blamed Western powers for the impasse, saying that France was responsible for derailing the deal. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry shot back, saying, quote, "The French signed off on it. We signed off on it. There was unity, but Iran couldn't take it." A deadly cyclone that swept through Somalia has left hundreds dead. The cyclone covered three districts in the country's northeastern region and caused flash floods, destroyed homes, and left thousands of livestock dead. The Somalian Interior Minister has said the government will provide $1 million in aid to help communities afflicted by the cyclone. And that's it for World Watch.
Joining us now by telephone from Santiago are Alexander Ulmer, the Reuters reporter, and Kenneth Bunker with the London School of Economics. Our third guest is Columbia University professor John Dinges. John is a former Washington Post correspondent and the author of three books on Latin America. The most recent is The Condor Years, How Pinochet and His Allies Brought Terrorism to Three Continents. Welcome to Global Journalist.
Good to be here.
Alexander, tell us about the mood in Chile with only a few days left to go in the race.
Right. So this is the final stretch. Everything is very intense in terms of the campaigning. Santiago is completely plastered with different propaganda. There are people on street corners handing out leaflets, fans waving flags, etc. Sunday said to be quite different, just for a bit of color. For instance, alcohol sales will be banned, and it seems malls will be closed. This is a pretty consumer-driven nation, so it's going to be a different day. But despite the onslaught of propaganda and political campaigning, I wouldn't say the mood is electric here. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a strong disenchantment with the political elite, and you can sense that many people see this election having a, you know, as a chronicle of a victory foretold, because former President Michelle is set to win, be it on Sunday or in December. So, I mean, it's hard to ignore that there's a presidential election around the corner. There's a reminder in every street corner. But I wouldn't say that there's, you know, a sense of an ebullience or anything.
talking about the numbers, Kenneth, you've done a great deal of research on politics in Chile and actually have a website that attempts to predict the outcomes of both the legislative and the presidential races. So what's likely to happen on Sunday?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I think the result of the election is pretty clear. Every poll since the candidates registered in August, in late August, have shown that Bachelet is the favorite candidate in the race. She is likely to win in the first round, and if not, it is very likely that she will win in the second round, given that she is over 20 points over her the second favorite candidate, a runner-up, Evelyn Matthei. So Bachelet should win the election this Sunday, and because it's so clear that she's the favorite candidate, I think the focus of the election has changed more to what Bachelet's presidential agenda looks like, what kind of policy she will implement once she is elected.
All right, let's get into policy in a bit, but I wanted to talk a little bit about some developments in the past 2 months and put those in context. So about 2 months ago, Chile marked the 40th anniversary of the military coup that overthrew the socialist government of Salvador Allende. And 1 month ago, thousands of students protested in downtown Santiago demanding education reform. John, do these two developments favor Bachelet?
I think the country has pretty much made up its mind how it feels about the Pinochet era. Favorable ratings for Pinochet. Remember, he had over 40% of the vote in 1988 when he lost the referendum, but that's considerable support for a dictator. That support, I believe, and maybe you have some more recent numbers, but that support for Pinochet's project is below 10%. And I want to recall another anniversary. It was this, October 18th, I believe it was the anniversary of Pinochet's detention in London. And that was when he was finally brought into the judicial system for the crimes that were committed during the military coup. And it was a case initiated in Spain. He was in London thinking that he was free of any judicial prosecution. And to his great surprise, he was put under arrest and eventually brought back to Chile, where he was subject to trial. He never was actually put on trial. He was never actually sentenced. But that was the end of the Pinochet era as far as having influence over politics. And whether or not that is still coming up, I think if you're in Santiago, you have a better sense of that. I believe that people have moved on to a great extent, but it's very, very difficult for the right wing, particularly the UDI party, which was founded to support the Pinochet project. Right. And Evelyn Matthei is a member of the UDI party. It's very difficult for them to win the election. The current president, Sebastián Piñera, is a member of the Renovación Nacional, which is a right-wing party, but it's a much more moderate right-wing party.
Okay, before Kenneth and Alexander, I'd like you to weigh in on this, but I wanted to hear your reactions to a comment that Piñera made to reporters last week. He said, quote, "The past mustn't kidnap the future. The hatreds of our grandfathers can't poison the lives of our grandchildren." So is it likely that most voters will make their decision on policy issues or on the personal histories of the top two candidates? Kenneth?
I think this election is more about the recent years and what has happened to the Alianza, which is a center-right coalition, and the Nueva Mayoría, which is a center-left coalition. I don't think that Pinochet is as important as he was in the elections of 1989, 1993, 1999. And I don't think the personal history of Matthei and Bachelet is also going to matter that much for people to decide this election. We have to remember that the candidates that finally came to election of both coalitions came in very different manners. Bachelet has been the runner, the main candidate of the Nueva Mayoría, the center-left coalition, since she left her first presidency in 2010, and she's always been the favorite candidate of that coalition. On the other side, Alianza already had three candidates before Matthei, so Matthei was kind of put into the race, even maybe against her will, kind of thrown into the race and, mm-hmm. and racing against Bachelet, which is the extreme favorite in this election. So I think people already made up their mind before Matei even came into the race.
Okay. And Alexandra?
So you're asking a very interesting but complicated question, David. In terms of the past, I mean, I'd agree with Kenneth that things have moved on and this is not a referendum on Pinochet. People are thinking of their future. But at the same time, it is a bit of a false dichotomy because so much of what has happened in Chile's past continues to be the subtext in many political discussions. I mean, some of the proposals that Bachelet has put forth, such as getting rid of the electoral system as it stands or ripping up the constitution, is basically an attack on the Pinochet legacy, right? Because these are dictatorship era creations. At the same time, in terms of your other question about the personalities, I think it's unquestionable that Bachelet's kind of warm nature and her empathetic side speaks really strongly to voters, especially lower middle income women who make up a sizable portion of the electorate. She's not a populist by any stretch of the imagination, but her social policies coupled with her charm play a really big role in her popularity, for sure.
And let's move to the present then about policy. Are most people supportive of Bachelet's proposed education reforms? And I know obviously the student protesters are. Alexander, first you.
I don't know if I'd make a sweeping statement on that. I mean, there's huge. One of the main student demands was having free education, and Bachelet has said she would work towards free education. Which has left some of the more, so to speak, radical factions of the student movement unsatisfied because they want wholesale change. They don't want, private schooling. They don't want benefits from they don't want education to be run as how they say as a business. And they don't feel many don't feel like Bachelet is promising a real overhaul, but rather tweaks. At the same time, she's promised a really ambitious tax reform, hiking corporate taxes from 20% to 25%. Which is a substantial, stash of cash that will go towards education, improving and making education free, according to her promise. So I don't know, David, if I could say percentage-wise, maybe Kenneth has a better sense of that, how the support is broken down. But I think people in general are supportive of a change in education. This is across the board, but some of the people in the student movement feel like her promises don't go far enough, which is, a frequent complaint about Bachelet.
And Kenneth, are education and taxes the two biggest issues from what you found?
Well, I think they are. They're very important issues. I mean, if we look at the election from outside a little bit, we can see that there's a clear cleavage here between people that want to change the model, the free market model that was installed by the Pinochet regime and that the Concertación and Piñera have kept alive during the past 24 years, and people that just want to tweak the model, want to make some changes to it. On the one hand, people that want a new model kind of fall on the side of Bachelet and most of the candidates that are also going in this election, which are 9 candidates in total, because Bachelet promises that she's going to have a new constitution, she's going to have an educational reform, and she's going to have a tax reform. Those are 3 very important reforms to have a new model. And on the other side is Matei, who only proposes some minor changes to the model, but in general she wants to keep the same. So if you ask me where people fall on either side of the cleavage, I would say that most people agree with Bachelet that these are necessary. But they also they haven't made up their mind on how to make these changes exactly.
Mm-hmm. I saw some polling numbers. I was on a TV program in Colombia. Yesterday, and polling numbers that we were talking about on that show showed a fairly strong support for education reform, defined as moving toward free education at the higher education level, which many people think actually is regressive, but that's a whole different discussion, and very strong support for tax reform. Lukewarm supportive, but a bare majority for the constitution, the idea of a constitutional assembly, and stronger support for her idea for the reformist approach to changing Pinochet era laws. In other words, keeping Pinochet's constitution as it has been reformed up until now, with additional reforms to get rid of the arcane election system called the binominal which is clearly exotic and undemocratic. So I think that there's, you know, she is a leader. She's when she proposes something, she draws a lot of people with her. I think that's an important factor in Chile.
And I wanted to, I'm a little bit curious about why Mate's numbers are so low, considering obviously Bachelet is popular, but as labor minister, she seems to have been successful. The economy is doing better than when she came into became labor minister. The unemployment's lower. Things are going well economically. Why isn't that resonating? John, I'll start with you.
Well, as I said before, she has the burden of being identified with the UDI party, and there were even stronger candidates from the UDI party. That's the most extreme rightist party. I think I've always considered her a moderate within the context of the Chilean right wing, but even so, she is more burdened with the identification of the Pinochet era than others. I think she's respected. She is on very friendly terms with Bachelet. They were friends ever since they were kids together when their fathers were generals in the Air Force. So it's a very civil environment in Chile when elections are done. I would say it's more civil in many senses than here in the United States. There are many candidates. This is a preliminary election. Mm-hmm. Many times, in fact, I think in all previous elections, it has gone to a segunda vuelta, to a second round. Uh-huh. It's many people, I would throw it out to our other guests, whether you think it's going to go to a second round. But there's a good chance, I think, that Bachelet would win 50% in the first round. So I think there's like eight other candidates.
Yeah.
Some candidates on the right, which are taking votes away from Mate. So, you know, all of these factors are involved.
Now, I want to continue on that conversation. But before we continue, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. This week, we have articles on Chile's top two presidential candidates and Chile's role in Latin America, along with an infographic on the main challenges facing the next president. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or on our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at globaljourn. Alexandra, what do you think about Mate and the reason for her low numbers?
Right. Well, I wanted to reinforce one aspect John mentioned, which are obviously her links to the Pinochet dictatorship. I mean, not only is she the daughter of an Air Force general who participated in the junta, but she also voted in favor of the continuation of the dictatorship in the 1988 plebiscite. So that's dogged her, especially, you know, a year when Chile's commemorating the 40-year anniversary of the coup. I mean, it was just a lot of constant reminders of her role. But I also wanted to highlight two other things that have weighed against her. I mean, first, as you well mentioned, she was labor minister in Sebastián Piñera's administration. And though Chile's been growing economically fantastically in the past 4 years, you know, in large part due to favorable copper prices, Piñera's a billionaire businessman who's just not been able to connect with everyday Chileans. So that's definitely weighed against Mate. Mm-hmm. And the third element I'd mention is her personality. I mean, to put it mildly, she's outspoken or fiery, has a sharp tongue, and people remember her outbursts, you know, against fellow congressmen, against other politicians that have sometimes, you know, had foul language. It's been very, very strong, to put it mildly. So that's a really sharp contrast to Bachelet, who's seen by some people as a maternal, welcoming figure. Again, you know, a strong contrast between the two candidates.
Okay, and I wanted to throw a little bit of a wild card in here, and that is the end of compulsory voting. Kenneth, what do you think that impact will have on the elections on Sunday? And can you explain for our listeners and viewers what has happened?
Right. So Chile basically had compulsory voting from 1989 all the way until the last presidential election was in 2009. And then the Piñera government changed the compulsory voting system to a voluntary voting system, where people can decide whether they want to vote or they do not want to vote. So basically, this was first used in the 2012 municipal election, where people elected mayors and councilmen. And one of the main effects of voluntary voting is that it creates an uncertainty around the result of the election. So what will happen in 2012, and we can see this because there's not nearly as many polls in 2013 as there were in 2009, is that people are very, they don't really know exactly what the result of the election will be because there's so few polls going out.
And Alexander, if everybody thinks that Bachelet is going to win easily, maybe they won't go to the polls, and that could affect things, right?
Right. That's one theory. And a competing theory is the contrary theory, basically, that the right is so demoralized and is so sure they're heading for the worst defeat in I don't know how many decades that no one's going to bother to vote. So a lot of dueling hypotheses out there. From what I've gathered, if turnout is higher than expected, that will increase the chances of a second round just because percentage-wise it would be unfavorable to Bachelet. So conversely, if turnout is low because of, you know, disenchantment or people have better things to do on a Sunday, you know, beginning of spring, that would technically help Bachelet win off the bat.
Okay. Sunday. Let's move to the legislative elections. I know if, say, Bachelet does win the first round or even wins the second round, she's going to need support in the legislature to push forward some of the reforms she's proposed. So, Kenneth, what do you think is going to happen in the legislative races?
Right. So basically, to sum this up, Bachelet has proposed three different things. One is a new constitution for which she needs two-thirds of both the Senate and the Chamber of Deputies. She has also proposed an educational reform for which she needs 4/7 of both the Senate and the Chamber of Deputies. And she has proposed a tax reform for which she only needs a simple majority in the Senate and the Chamber of Deputies. The legislative election, as John mentioned previously, uses a binomial electoral system, which is quite unfair since even though one coalition can get an absolute majority of the votes, it ends up tying the election when the votes are translated into seats. So even though Bachelet has a high majority, it is questionable that she will be able to reach 4/7 of the Chamber of Deputies and the Senate, which basically means that she can only, once she comes to power, she can only have a tax reform, and she will have to forfeit the educational reform and the new constitution.
Right. John, what's your take on that?
Well, I'm laughing because every time I try to understand or explain the binomial or hear somebody else explaining, I say, oh my God.
Or calculate 4/7.
It's so bizarre. Basically, it was Pinochet's and his allies, which is the UDI party, Mate's party, a system to guarantee that the right would not be excluded from a veto role in the government. And that is the way it has functioned ever since democracy returned to Chile. It means that you have an overrepresentation of a minority party, which has always been the right-wing parties. Whether the... I'd like to throw out the question, maybe whether Kenneth said a new constitution. I understand that she's talking about reforming the existing constitution to have a new constitution, and reforms, amendments would require, as you said, a two-thirds majority. But there's also the idea of a constitutional assembly, which many people, I believe all of the other left-wing candidates favor and has a fair amount of public support. And so far, Bachelet has said she doesn't think it's necessary to go to a constitutional assembly. This would be a very radical step. The most radical countries in Latin America, Venezuela, Ecuador, Bolivia, have all gone to constitutional assemblies, thrown out their old constitutions. So that's on the table. Basically, I think she's using that as leverage, that if you don't reform the constitution and get rid of these 4/7 and 2/3 and binomial systems, if we don't make it a fairer constitution, the alternative may be a constitutional assembly, which, in a way, is going to be really radical.
So we're kind of at a watershed moment then in Chilean politics. Kenneth, would you agree? How big is this election?
Well, I agree with John. I mean, this is a very important election because, as he says, Bachelet has she confronts the dichotomy of either using an institutional road to reform the Constitution, which would basically mean that she needs the 2/3 in Congress to undertake reform, or she's also said that she might use the Constitutional Assembly, for which she would have to use extra institutional regulations in order to take. Chile, as in Chile, in contrast to other countries in the region, does not provide for a constitutional assembly or a plebiscite in the constitution. So if Bachelet does not obtain at least 80 deputies and 26 senators in this upcoming election, then she will be forced to kind of put the constitutional assembly into the presidential agenda.
And Alexander, when you're trying to sell this story to Reuters to get wider coverage, what do you tell them about this election, why it's important? And so why do you say this is a big deal?
Well, I mean, Chile had a watershed moment in 2011 when students poured into the street to demand education reform. Education is obviously a very symbolic issue because it has to do with you know, morals and values and future and the kind of political and economic system one wants, right? I mean, this election is obviously important, but at the same time, I mean, Bachelet, who's a well-known moderate, who's already governed Chile, is said to be reelected. So I wouldn't say it's about to, you know, to radically change the course of the country by any stretch of the imagination. I think she's going to have a very messy government. She's going to have to do a lot of horse trading in Congress, no matter what kind of majority they have. She's probably, odds are, going to have to water down or scale down some of her proposals, and the right is presumably going to have to cede on certain issues. Obviously, tax reform is going to be easier, supposedly, to pass through than a complete constitutional overhaul. But regardless, much of Bachelet's political capital is going to be spent wrangling in Valparaíso in Congress.
And Kenneth, I'll give you the last word here. Give us your prediction for the percentages of the top few candidates.
Yeah. Well, what we have on our website, tresquintos.com, I'll just plug that in, is Bachelet 47.3% and Matei 24.4%. So Bachelet, we also have a range where Bachelet can also come over 50%, but we do believe that she's going to be between 45% and 50%. And I would also say that if she does not win in the first round, she will win in the second round.
Okay. Well, it's been a fascinating discussion. I appreciate you all educating us on what's happening in Chile.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Global Journalist is produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us today was Alexander Elmer from Reuters, economist Kenneth Bunker, and Professor John Dingus from Columbia University. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. Victoria Mitzkete was this week's lead producer. Please join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.